Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. We talk about the strategies and the tools and the approaches. I share some of the mistakes I've made along the way and some of the success stories, all with the hopes of helping you empower your students with voice and choice. We've been talking about virtual learning and hybrid learning, and today we're going to be getting into this idea of what it looks like to have hybrid learning from five different models. And we'll be getting into that in just a moment. But first, I actually want to talk about something that's only tangentially related to this topic. So here we go. In the 1960s, cities built multi-purpose stadiums, and they were, you know, built for football, for baseball, for concerts. They were built for everything. They replaced the traditional, you know, ballpark in baseball. They replaced the big, you know, concert venues and amphitheaters, and they were essentially designed to be all things to all people. These were supposed to be sleek, modern, and broad enough to encompass the needs of every entertainment industry. But these multi-purpose stadiums weren't designed with the fans in mind, which led to half-empty baseball parks and games where fans had horrible sight lines, and they just lacked the character of the old ballpark. And the football games had this weird scenario where the athletes would lose traction on the baseball infield because they were suddenly running on the dirt. And honestly, it wasn't a whole lot better for watching a concert. Yes, there was a lot of energy in the stadiums, but they didn't have anywhere near the sound quality that you would get with, you know, a traditional auditorium. Now, the same challenge is something that we're facing right now with hybrid learning. If we're not careful, we can all too easily design lessons that don't work for students at home or students in our physical classrooms. Now, I'm just going to put it out there. I don't particularly like teaching those lessons where half the students are at home and half the students are attending via a video conference. On a purely functional level, it works. I get it, but it doesn't work well. It's the instructional version of a spork. By trying to merge together two incompatible formats, you're left designing lessons that lack the full range of options in either environment. In other words, it's a whole lot like the multi-purpose stadium or the spork or anything that tries to do too many things at the same time. And I actually made this mistake the first time I taught a pedagogy course where half of my students were in person and the other half were at home. I ended up lecturing in front of a computer camera so that the students at home could see me via Zoom. I then faced my web camera to the board where they were expected to look at the slides that I had created. Now, fortunately, I had uploaded my slideshow to the LMS, but still, this was not working. It was really, really bad. And because I was talking to students right there in front of the, you know, computer, I guess I lacked the physicality, and I wasn't energetic and dynamic and all those things that I try to be when I'm actually speaking to a group in person. And then it got even worse. When students asked questions in person, I would repeat it so that the students on Zoom could hear me as well. And when they had questions, I would repeat it out loud for the students who were face to face. And I ended up being this weird go-to between the two different groups at the same time. I was like this translator, I guess, speaking the same language, but just amplifying the voice of both sides when they couldn't hear each other. I attempted to place students at home in small groups who were in person, and that led to these really bad echoes. And I knew that that's what would happen, but I just kept hoping it wouldn't be that bad. And let me tell you, it was that bad. Eventually, I changed the grouping and modified the assignment, but the lesson remained clunky and awkward and just plain bad. However, hybrid learning doesn't have to be spork-based learning. I left that first meeting with a realization that I had to change our entire hybrid model in that class. I couldn't simply have students zoom in to the physical course and expect it to work. I had to find a new approach that would maximize the benefits of both face-to-face and virtual environments. And that's what I want to talk about today, different models that we can have when it comes to this. If you look at the blog post that corresponds, you'll see that I have the five different models, and then I have, you know, a table that goes with it as well. I have some resources that I've attached to it, so you might want to check it out. It might be something that you find some value in. But here are the five different models. So the first model is the differentiated model. In this model, every student attends the class synchronously at the same time. However, you design differentiated activities for students who are at home and students who are in person. It works well to make use of both synchronous and asynchronous communication tools for both of the groups, right? So especially some of those asynchronous tools become the things that I guess work like a bridge between the two different groups. With this approach, all students are attending the class at the same time. That's the key idea. Students begin by logging into a video conference at home, or they go to their seats in person, depending on the group, right? And from there, you can differentiate your approach to the two different modalities. Now, here's a sample class in a traditional classroom. You have the warm-up. Students at home and in person both work on a warm-up that you've posted to your LMS or learning management system. That's Canvas, Google Classroom, whatever that may be. You set a timer in person and online so students know exactly how much time they have. And during this time, you can take attendance. During direct instruction, students at home view a pre-recorded flipped video that you've created. This is where you've created your lecture essentially ahead of time, and they just press play on the link. Everyone is on mute, so that's really important. Every student is on mute. And meanwhile, you can then press play on the video for your classroom in person, and this allows everyone to have access at the same time. You then move into guided practice. Students meet together as a whole class in this phase. It's a little bit awkward. It doesn't work perfectly. They can submit their questions via Google Form, and you can answer them in the moment, or you can have students use a wireless microphone so that the students on Zoom can hear it. And then you can have the students who are on Zoom or Google Meets or whatever also asking questions, and you just project them onto the projector with the audio there as well. So the whole group can hear, you know, anyone at home who speaks up and asks a question as well. So you have this sort of mic'd up situation where both groups can hear each other. Then when you move into independent practice, as students move into small groups to practice their learning, the students at home can work collaboratively using things like breakout rooms, while the students in person will meet in small groups. And you can add accountability components by having students write in a shared document or filling out a form. And at times you might even have students that are in person meet with some students who are online, but that can be admittedly tricky. It's really hard to avoid the echo thing, even when you have students wearing headphones. It just, you run into some challenges. And then the closing activity is for every student to fill out an online form for the closing activity. Now, if you go project-based, you might have a warm-up where students work on their blog posts at home and in person. You do an even shorter pre-recorded flipped video, and then you make the bulk of the time project time. And during that project time, they can use tools like Trello to do project management. They can use collaborative tools, something we've talked about in a previous podcast. And you're really spending most of the time engaged in projects. And your job is that you meet with small groups, either via the breakout rooms that you're using in your virtual conferencing, video conferencing, or meeting with small groups in person in the moment. Now, while this option keeps groups separated by in-person or at home, students still interact with one another in the class. You can post questions as warm-ups. There's a lot of opportunities to interact with each other. And you can still have some times where you put them into mixed groups, right? They might do the 20-minute peer feedback system, or they could work on a shared Google Doc and do a collaborative brainstorm. There's all kinds of different options that they can engage in that allow them to, you know, interact with one another. But the predominant grouping is still, you know, small groups that are either in person or at home. And part of why I say this is, you know, in my experience, when you have students who are at home working with students who are there, you know, face to face at the same time, they all end up on the computer anyway. And so at that point, you end up moving into a place where it's kind of all virtual, and it gets kind of hard to manage with, you know, small groups and whatnot, where everyone has their headphones on, but they can sometimes hear each other. And it's just a big challenge. It's a little bit easier to just, as often as possible, have them broken up into the at-home group and the face-to-face group, but really focus on creating a classroom culture that is, you know, blended at the same time. Okay, the second option is the multi-track model. This second approach treats each group as a totally different cohort or entity within the larger class. So while students might learn the same lesson and the same objectives, they essentially function like separate classes. At the start of the course, students sign up for the virtual class. That's where they are synchronous remote learning. The online track, which is asynchronous remote learning, or the face-to-face track. As you teach, you run the virtual and in-person lessons at the same time. And meanwhile, students can access the online modules on their own. And so it's kind of divided up where those who are, you know, online, it's fully asynchronous. Virtual, it is fully synchronous, but online. And then, you know, done digitally. And then, of course, the in-person is all synchronous as well. Here's what this one would look like. In a warm-up, students in all three tracks log on to their cohort's LMS. They answer the same discussion questions, but each cohort has a separate discussion area, right? So they're divided up. You might have some moments where students in the virtual session can then, you know, not just respond to the warm-up, but they can engage in a pair share discussion in breakout rooms while students in person are all, you know, talking to their peers, and you're running it that way. For direct instruction, students at home in the virtual cohort view a pre-recorded flip video, similar to the last model, by pressing play on the link that you share. Meanwhile, you teach the same direct instruction in a more interactive way face-to-face, so you're not pressing play on a video. You're actually doing it live to the students who are in person. And then students in the online cohort, they just have to watch the flipped video that you've recorded with the virtual cohort, and they just have to watch it by the end of the day. So that's how it works for them. Guided practice, you vary your guided practice depending on the day. So you do guided practice with students in person on, like, you know, Monday and Wednesday, and then on Tuesday and Thursday you would do guided practice with students who are you know, virtual, and you run it via the video conference. So you divide up guided practice based on the day, and you never try to have the groups together. Members of the online cohort have the option of joining the virtual cohort in these moments if they need additional practice, but it's really not something that you do very often. And in fact, you might on the fifth day, on that Friday, have an open office time of guided practice for students in the online cohort. And then for independent practice, it's fully separated out. So it's students who are working, you know, in person, students who are working synchronously online, and students who are working asynchronously online. The second model is fully tailored for each environment, right? You're not trying to go spork. You're not trying to go multi-purpose stadium. You are just giving the, you know, designing the best instruction for each modality, and it's completely separate. But there's a real challenge in terms of prep work and logistics. I have taught this way before, and it is exhausting to try to run both groups at the same time. For this reason, I really think it helps to divide the cohorts into separate classes and have different teachers alternate teaching the virtual or in-person groups. And so, you know, this teacher teaches virtual for a semester and then in person, or and then you flip or divide up the quarters or divide up the day, right? So half the day is virtual, half the day is in person for each teacher, and divide it up that way. That's not always easy to do, right? Some schools have a lot of students, you know, showing up in person. They have to keep their social distance, and it's just not that easy to pull off. So, you know, in those moments, it's just not something that you can do. Now, for project-based learning, I found that there's a lot more flexibility. You can craft projects that allow the online cohort to work independently, and then they can schedule, you know, collaborative work time if they need it. And that tends to work, you know, pretty well. When it comes to the virtual group, you know, they can just use their breakout rooms, spend all their time in their breakout rooms. Then you jump onto those breakout rooms and you have small group conversations with them. And your job as the facilitator in these moments is that you often move from group to group in the virtual groups and, you know, face to face. You answer questions and you're kind of just moving between these groups, working with them. Now, you still can do direct instruction, and it's often done in a like flipped video model, but it's pretty minimal. The goal in this approach is to have the PBL process really as student-centered as possible. So there's very little direct instruction. Again, you'll always have to have some direct instruction. It's just part of the process, but you know, you get the idea. The third model is the split AB model. I think this is the one that I'm seeing the most often right now, and I really think it's the most doable option during a pandemic. I personally like this model. So here's what this particular model looks like. You have group A meet on Monday and Wednesday, and then you'll have a B group that meets on Tuesday and Thursday, and then Friday you'll do homeroom, study hall, small group conferences, open office hours, things like that. You'll also often have prep time to create some of the assignments that students will do when they're working at home. And with the AB model, teachers can make the most out of the face-to-face time by maximizing student interactions when they meet in the physical building. They can then have students watch flipped videos, do station rotations, engage in meaningful independent practice, or do independent projects when they're at home. So the goal is to make the home time as asynchronous as possible. Now, you can do fun things like a scavenger hunt, or, you know, having them interview people. There's all kinds of options they can still do. It doesn't have to be boring. But then the synchronous learning happens in a face-to-face environment. And so what does this actually look like? Well, there's a few different ways that you can organize this. You can do a flipped model where students watch a video, read an article, or get a a preview assignment that they do at home, and then they meet in person, and that's where they do a lab to reinforce ideas, engage in guided practice, or do small group intervention instruction. So, you know, that's what you're saying is, at home you might do anywhere from a homework to a project to reading an article or listening to a podcast or something else, and then you can reinforce these ideas when you show up in person by either doing, you know, something like a game-based learning, a simulation, a lab, a Socratic seminar. There's all kinds of different ways that you can make the most of that face-to-face instruction. But you could also do things like targeted intervention. You can do PBL with this model. Students work at home doing like practice work or skill work. And then when they're face-to-face, they spend most of their time creating projects and engaging in project-based learning. They can also do something where they're working on projects at home and in person. They bring the supplies back and forth, and the in-person time is when they're really doing a lot of communication as a small group. They're engaged in, you know, deeper collaboration, and then they work independently on it at home, which, if you think about the way that we all work on projects, you know, in the real world, that's kind of what we do. There's a station rotation model where they can rotate through stations. There's an intervention and enrichment model. It's similar to the flip model, except when they show up to class, they either are put into intervention groups or enrichment groups. And you really spend that time providing targeted help. There's a seminar model, which is kind of what you have at universities. Students do a reading, they listen to a podcast, they watch a video, and then they engage in a Socratic seminar altogether. So those are different ways that you can structure this this whole AB model. We'll be getting into that a little bit deeper in a future podcast. Then there is the virtual accommodation model. The virtual accommodation model is what happens when you have a few different students, a handful of students, I guess not a handful because they're not tiny, unless you teach Smurfs, right? But let's say you have a small number of students who are needing to work virtually, and you can pretty much teach in your normal face-to-face way, but then you bring those students in virtually, and you have partners that they work with, and you try to integrate them into the class as much as possible. And it's very doable if you have, you know, anywhere from 1 to 4 students. But if that doesn't work and you have a small number of students, again, 1 to 4 students, you might have to do an independent project. Sometimes in your in-person activity, it simply doesn't connect with what students can do at home. They might be doing a lab or a maker project, and they don't have the supplies to be able to pull it off. And in these moments, you might do something like an independent project and have students mastering the same standards, the same content, the same learning targets, but in a way that is fully personalized and driven by them. They might do choice menus. Another variation might be, you know, an adaptive learning program where they get to move on to the new standards and lessons once they've mastered something. But you can also have this independent process, independent project approach happen at home, but also in person by something like a Genius Hour project or a Wonder Day project, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast. So those are the 5 different models. Now, each of these models work well in certain situations, and honestly, they work poorly in other situations. As teachers, we can think strategically about how to design our learning so that we can optimize the benefit of each model. And as schools, we can think strategically about the best time to use each approach and design our systems specifically with that in mind. Even so, there will be mistakes. Learning is inherently dynamic and complicated, and hybrid learning adds another layer of complexity. But by being intentional, we can at least help students thrive in this hybrid learning environment. And in the process, we can help set it up so that they can actually thrive in any learning environment. And that's really the goal for them as lifelong learners. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts? Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.